Hey, I'm Lance Frazier.
Name of Rosie Butter.
My name is Trey Mason.
You're listening to the Pipples Podcast.
You're listening to the Pipples Podcast.
Stay tuned. I'm ready. I'm ready. Yeah. Here we go. Here we go. Get your feeling now. Get them high. Get them low. Cause we're dealing now. Everybody's giving it all they got. Cause we're ready.
Yeah, we're ready. Here we go. Pipples Podcast. That is the Johnny McQuaig Band. Here we go. The same song that you hear the Riders come out to at Mosaic Stadium. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Alex.
I'm Steve.
I'm Greg.
I'm Amy.
And this is your premier Saskatchewan Rough Riders fan podcast. Give us a follow on Twitter at PifflesPod. You can give me a follow at RealAlexD.
You can find me at Safamod.
Follow me at Greg on Sports.
And I am at RealAmyD.
Give us a like on Facebook as well, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. Check us out on Instagram. Just search PifflesPod. And check out the website, PifflesPodcast.com. Pipples Podcast is brought to you by Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive in Regina. Check out their great happy hour drink specials, half price, Monday to Friday, 2 to 5 p.m. And of course, don't miss out on their Summer Blizzards menu. And their the Blizzard of the Month is the Reese Extravaganza.
That thing's amazing.
I had one on Miracle Treat Day last week.
I had one last night.
Oh my God.
So good.
I still can't stop getting the firework one. So I'm
peanut butter cups, Reese's Pieces, caramel.
Caramel, peanut butter topping. And it's peanut butter overload. It's amazing.
That's the one you want to go with.
I didn't try it. Sorry. I have no opinion.
You should.
Yes.
We should probably go get one because it's going to be 30 degrees tomorrow. I think we should probably get one.
Apparently that's one of the few things I will eat.
Not Greek food.
Not Greek
food. All right. Coming up on this week's show, we have the opening kickoff presented by Kathy Feshton of Royal LePage Regina Realty. We're going to take a look around the CFL since there was no Rider game to recap, but we have lots of Rider news to talk
nothing
about.
Happened.
Nothing big anyway. No. Someone came off the suspended list and someone got put on one. But
it's essentially a rookie DB.
Yeah, whatever. Nothing big. Nothing big. Our Tallgrass Apparel engaging with the enemy. We're going to talk to the Bone Crusher himself, Derek Dennis, and we're going to talk to him, spoiler alert, about his time in Saskatchewan and going back to Calgary. So we'll hear a little bit of that. Our Cypress Hills destination area Pipples player profile, and we'll have our Week 9 game picks. But let's get started. Time now for the opening kickoff. Okay, so as Greg alluded to, the Riders released a rookie defensive back, Daron Carter. Saturday night, and I'm still kind of in shock about this. Saturday night, sitting at home watching the Ottawa-Montreal game, scrolling through Twitter, all of a sudden, Daron Carter tweets out, "Peace out, Sask. I just got the call." Wait, what? Turns out, he is no longer needed by the Saskatchewan Rough Riders.
We all had that same discussion at that point. Was he trolling us again? It just felt like that.
And his Twitter account says expert level troll.
We've got our own DM chat. We're all of a sudden, "Hey guys, you seen this?" And we're like, "What the hell? He's trolling. He's obviously trolling." And then Pollock's tweet came out, and I'm like, immediately, so I'm like, "Guys, this is real."
So the first thought was, okay, what did he do? We didn't expect him to get cut straight up for really no one reason. So we're speculating, of course, and it's okay, well, did he do something? Was there another drug charge? You know, marijuana, did he get busted on his bye week kind of thing? Like, who knows what's going on?
I think it's because of the suddenness of it all. You're talking late on a Saturday, and all of a sudden they're cutting a guy. And last time we saw a guy cut in the middle with no warning was Messam. And of course, immediately that's where everyone's thoughts went to. But you knew this wasn't a situation like that because even the CFL staff was tweeting out what the hell is going on.
And it was just, like you said, it was just the sudden nature. We're all sitting there enjoying a football game, and all of a sudden nobody cares about the football game. And it was a pretty good one. We're all talking about Daron. Daron was the newsmaker again. And I'm still kind of in shock that it happened. I get it, though. I understand the decision to move on. I love Daron Carter. I love what he brought to this team. But at what point is enough enough? You can't call out the offensive coordinator. You can't act like a jackass on the sidelines when your team gets stuffed on a goal line stand. You have to be a professional. And sooner or later, the team's going to, you know, cut the babysitting fund.
When they brought Daron in, it was always Chris Jones even said, Duran is a player you have to manage. They were having daily phone calls to keep Duran in the right state of mind. Eventually, that wears on everybody.
And well, they stopped doing that this year. They thought that he matured enough last year from all those meetings that they didn't have to do that this year.
You would think when the guy gets charged twice with marijuana possession at an airport, maybe you might want to start making those phone calls again, because clearly the whole maturity thing may not have happened.
And so when you got a guy like that, and unfortunately, doesn't matter how skilled you are, he's washed out everywhere he's been. We're talking all, like, once he left high school, went to college, he's washed out of three universities.
He didn't make it in Bama.
Didn't make it in Bama. Ended, I think his last one was actually a community college, if yep. I remember correctly. Montreal, he's trying to fight Rakeem Cato, goes to the NFL, washes out on the practice roster.
When the Colts didn't need receivers and they took a receiver in the first round, who's no longer on their roster,
exactly.
By the way.
He's a hell of a talent. Just his headspace is not in the right spot.
At what point do you have to wonder where the problem is? When you said it, he has not lasted 2 years anywhere he's been. That's insane.
Didn't he have a fight with a teammate?
Yeah, Rakeem Cato last year.
No, this year.
That
was speculation.
Nothing concrete.
It was Sam Williams last year, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was in the middle of that.
That was the one that literally no media saw, and all of a sudden it was a problem.
Yeah.
And I was there that day. I didn't see anything, and I was sitting with all the media, and nobody saw anything. So I'm not sure what exactly happened there. You have to go off what everybody's speculating on. But I think it was the timing more than anything. And I think that the team tried to bury it on a Saturday night when they didn't think people would be on Twitter or anything. And okay, you know how, you know, a lot of news agencies will get a release at Friday at 5 p.m. because all the reporters are gone, and hopefully they'll forget about it on the weekend. And the writers aren't practicing until Wednesday. So, okay, well, maybe people will forget about it. Nope. That doesn't happen here in Ryderville. So Sunday morning, Chris Jones speaks to the media, a big giant waste of 3 minutes of their time, which, I mean, that's still their job. They have to go do it and everything, but basically told us nothing, that we're going in a different direction. It has nothing to do with the possibility of Terrell Owens coming. It's completely unrelated. And what we gathered from the little bit that Chris Jones said was that it was a bunch of little things. And like you mentioned, Steve, like it's, the little things are just starting to add up, and at what point is enough enough? And I said this in my Tuesday takes. I love Duran Carter. I love his personality. He's a breath of fresh air in a world full of cliches. He's anything but. But at the same time, like you said, you can't go and badmouth your coaching staff, your offense, no matter how right you are, that both him and Naaman Roosevelt, the two biggest playmakers on this team, are sitting there watching the game go by because they're not getting a chance. And I get his frustration. I totally do. We're all frustrated for the exact same thing. The guys can't score three chances from the 1 yard line. They need to be able to score there. They do that. They win that game against Edmonton, and we're sitting at 4-3, and all of a sudden we're in a playoff spot and we're looking better. And right now we're 3-4 and we're in last place. We're sitting out of a playoff spot. So he needs to continue. Last year there was a lot of maturing from him. And we did see that. There was a lot of still, you know, silly stuff on the side, but it wasn't anything ridiculous. And this year, it slowly got a little bit more and more ridiculous. But at the same time, this is a guy who literally did everything the coaches asked him to do, playing defensive back, which he shouldn't be doing in the first place. That's just stupid coaching. And we've talked about that ad nauseum on the show for the last, you know, 2 months. But I don't know. Like, I'm going to miss Duran being around because I think this is the first place that he's been that he's ever really felt accepted, and he could be himself, and now he's no longer able to.
just not too much of himself, apparently.
Right. But also with Duran, yes, calling out the coach is never a smart plan if you're a player, but I think a lot of it, too, is the effort. You always knew when it was – if you watched Duran line up, you knew if it was a running play. Because, one, he wasn't hustling out there, and, two, he wasn't lining up because the ball wasn't coming to him. And he even admitted that himself while playing on defense. He had to be more in tune to the game because he didn't know where the ball was going.
Mm-hmm.
And
watch him in practice. We go to practice all the time. They'll go out, they'll do their stretches in the morning, then they'll go do their team or their unit drills with the defense and with the, you know, their positional group, and then they'll go back and do some stretches and everything else. But in those stretches, They go from the goal line to about the 10 to 15 yard line, and they'll do their, you know, lunges and leg warm ups and everything too. He is literally not doing one of them. He's walking with the guys, usually standing beside Christian Jones because they were in Bama together for a little bit, and they're just chatting away. Christian Jones is still doing all the stretches. The coaches are doing the stretches. Daron Carter isn't. He's literally just walking there. I've never seen him kick his leg up once during those. I've never seen him, you know, bend down to touch his toes once when everybody else does. And it's a shame to see, because this guy has so much natural, God-given talent, and he refuses to apply himself. Think of where this guy could be, because his ceiling is so damn high. And he doesn't care.
NFL talent, Pop Warner mentality.
And you wouldn't think that he'd get that from, you know, his father being an NFL Hall of Famer who knows what it takes. You have to put in the work. I can only imagine how tough it is for him having that kind of pressure on him. One, of being the, you know, the son of a Hall of Famer and the pressure to perform. But I know you want to be your own self and you're never going to be Chris Carter kind of thing. But at the same time, look at what he did. Wouldn't you want to emulate that?
I wrote that piece last year talking about how Daron had, and this was when everyone thought he was maturing, how similar to his father, his dad had a lot of growing up to do in Philadelphia. It wasn't until he moved to Minnesota and of course got help for his issues and he became Chris Carter. The first couple seasons, Chris Carter wasn't Chris Carter. He became Chris Carter in Minnesota. And it looked like Daron was turning that corner here. Unfortunately, he just doesn't have the concentration to do it. And it sucks because he's a hell of a talent. He could be in the NFL. He could be the star of this league. He just gets in his own damn way.
So ramifications of this move. Obviously, no Daron Carter now. That leaves Naaman Roosevelt as the de facto number one receiver. Caleb Hawley is going to be back into the lineup after his one game benching, we'll call it. Injured list. He was benched. So is that it?
It's kind of terrifying when you look at what is already an anemic offense and you take away, in my opinion, the most electrifying player on that offense. We were already having trouble scoring points. We're bottom of the league. What, 8 touchdowns in 7 games? I think that's about where we're at.
8 offensive touchdowns in 7 games.
I'm terrified for Sunday night just from a offensive standpoint.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what you do there. Shaq Evans is going to be, we're going to see a lot more of Williams-Lambert and that bloody screen pass.
You know what? We have a running back who can block now.
That's nice.
Because Cameron Marshall was just re-signed by the team after failing a physical before training camp. He was released before training camp. Added to the practice roster. Does he maybe fit in there a little bit more because obviously the team is looking at a ball control offense. They're not looking for a big play, air it out CFL type offense, especially now without their big play player. But they're getting a guy who can catch the ball and who is willing to block. And that's what Chris Jones loves about Cameron Marshall, is the fact that he can block and he's very good at it.
Well, and you're going to give a guy like Zach Caleros, who actually goes through his reads, ample time to make the plays on this ball control offense. I love the signing of Cam Marshall. I think that was a great pickup. Especially with Thigpen's suspension, who knows what that's about? We haven't really heard yet. But
coming back from a bye week, maybe might have missed a flight, could have personal issues or something like that. Nothing serious, and it's honestly roster juggling so that you can get somebody else on the practice field.
Yeah, I hope it's not serious. Obviously, honestly, I would probably put Mason on the suspended list before Thigpen. So I'm thinking it's probably
could we just take Mason off of kick returns?
That'd be nice too.
He can run the ball. And he's shown flashes running the ball, but keep him off kick returns. Why, I don't know why you don't have Marcus Thigpen back there.
Yeah, he makes such stupid decisions.
Well, he just can't hold on to the ball.
Well, that too. But a few times he's overran the ball, and it just went over his head. It's like, what are you doing, man?
It seems common sense to have an electrifying guy like Marcus Thigpen on kick returns when that's
Thigpen and Jones specialty. Back there. That's you got to have those guys back there. Anyway, so no more Daron Carter. That's the end of the Carter experiment here in Saskatchewan, and
it's kind of ironic that episode 89 will be the first episode next week where we review a game without Daron.
plus side, we might be able to get to interview him sometime.
Oh,
so
man,
there we go.
I hope so.
That's about it. Not much else going on in Riderville, but that's the big thing. And I guess the team hits the practice field right away, and we'll see what goes on, and we'll keep you guys updated on what we see. And one more thing, Piffles Bowl 2. The first one we did last year for Hope's Home, we raised over $1,500, and we were quite pleased with it. This year, we were hoping to match that and beat it, and we absolutely did. $2,000 we were able to raise, thanks to everyone that came out there, coming out to Mosaic Stadium. Javon Johnson came out and threw the ball around a little bit, had a great time.
He's got an arm on him.
He said he threw like 60 touchdowns and 3 interceptions or something like that. Yeah. He didn't throw that many touchdowns, okay? But all in all, it was a great event, and we can't wait to do that again next year and hopefully make it bigger and better. And I do just want to give one shout-out again to Javon Johnson, but to Steve, you specifically, you basically took the Piffles Bowl as your event. You spearheaded pretty much the entire thing. So thank you for that. Really do appreciate all the work that you put into that, because it was great.
You're welcome.
And
for
all those that had a great time, send your thanks to Steve, because he put that on. And if you had an absolutely terrible time, blame Steve, because it was all his thing as well, too. So
don't thank him for taking off his shirt either.
Well, that's when they were having the best time.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Yeah.
Thanks for wearing one when my team played yours. The opening kickoff brought to you by Kathy Festian of Royal LePage Regina Realty. Check her out on Facebook, Kathy Festian, Royal LePage. Get into a little bit of CFL talk here. Before we bring on our special guest, we're going to talk I'm sorry, Johnny Manziel, but it's not because of the play on the field. It's because of what happened, on the very bottom of the field. Was going in for a touchdown, got absolutely smoked at the goal line. He was out. Pretty much out cold. Montreal ended up recovering the ball. I think it was Christian Matt who ended up recovering the ball, and it was a touchdown for Montreal. But the big story was that Manziel he clearly looked like he had some concussion symptoms anyway. Whether he was concussed or not remains to be seen. But they let him in, and he didn't miss a snap. This whole protocol things that they have seems a little weird to me when they're pulling out Mike Riley last year from a game when he bumped his head on the turf and told everybody, I am fine. I can promise you I'm okay. But then something like this where the guy clearly wasn't fine, and they just put him back out. What's your guys' take on this?
He clearly got knocked the F out. Like, he was limp, done. And, yeah, the fact that they didn't even hold him out for a couple plays just blows my mind. Like, just at least pretend like you're looking at the guy.
Well, when you look at it, a guy fumbles the ball, what's his first reaction going to be if he's not, or if he's all there?
Scramble.
Scramble, recover, try and get to it.
Except for Cam Newton. Move.
Yeah, Cam Newton goes the other way.
He didn't move. His hands were up. He had that same look that that Roosevelt had when he got knocked out. Just that, I don't want to say the limp, it was almost tense. Like, his body was just stuck in position. And I don't like it. I don't like the optics of it. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind he was out.
And the worst part is, because it's Manziel, this got play even in the States about how he didn't miss a snap after this hit. And it's bad. It looked real bad. And the worst part is, he was actually having a decent game.
He didn't look bad.
It's amazing what happens when you give a guy a playbook and let him practice a few times.
For more than 4 days?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, we'll see what happens this week. You missed the first day of practice this week due to an appointment. So
he's getting his hair did.
Take that for what it's worth. Now, the other thing in the CFL going on, and it's happening both this week and next week, is the Diversity is Strength campaign. And the league is looking at doing 2 weeks of celebrations, and they're talking about 12 different trailblazers that have played in the league before to celebrate diversity as strength. And we thought, who better to talk about this than the commissioner of the CFL himself, Mr. Randy Ambrosi. Mr. Commissioner, thanks for your time.
Yeah, it's great. Nice to join you.
Now, over these next 2 weeks, the league is celebrating with the Diversity as Strength weeks across the country. Now, for those who have only heard about the campaign but don't really know exactly what's going on, what is this campaign?
Well, it's an interesting question, and even the use of the word campaign is interesting, because really this started last year. There were T-shirts that were made kind of acknowledging and recognizing some of the great players who have played in our league over the many decades who had come from wide and varied, you know, backgrounds. And those T-shirts were sitting in a, you know, in a storage area. And then, of course, we all remember the horror of that Charlottesville situation. And Christina Litz called me. I was on my way to Regina, in fact, for a Riders game. And she said, you know, I think those shirts might, you know, just stand for a, you know, the positive side of diversity, and weren't really trying to make a political statement as much as a celebration of what's made our league so great. And we had this overwhelming outpouring of support from our fans and, you know, frankly, from people around the world. I did interviews from many parts of the U.S., and people were just so grateful that we were telling the positive side of the story in a, you know, what we hoped was a kind of a non-political way. And so we decided, well, look, we're going to do it all over again. And we're going to, you know, we want to grow it. It's literally about celebrating the inclusiveness of our game. You know, we've had a long and proud history of welcoming players in who might not have had a chance elsewhere. You know, you think of Bernie Custis and Chuck Ely and Warren Moon, just three names that come off, you know, that everyone knows. But you think of, you know, my dear friend Pierre Bercheval, from a great French Canadian family, and Pierre's a Hall of Famer, and you know, my best buddy Dan Ferroni, and of course Dan, you know, Italian Canadian heritage. And anyway, just telling those stories, and just for what it is, we've been a league that's done. We're not perfect. We're certainly not flawless, but we've done a really good job, and it's a nice way to tell the stories this year. You know, last week, Joanne Pollock, first female GM. We're celebrating Joey Moss, the legendary Joey Moss in Edmonton, Down syndrome, and yet Joey has made more people smile, and over the years, both in the Oilers and the Eskimo locker room, and you know, these are all parts of our league that we can be proud of.
Now, last year when this was launched, I know it was kind of a scramble to get it done in time for the game here. How much planning has gone into the event or the campaign this year? And what would you say has been the best part about it so far this season?
Oh, the best part is simple. When you tell the person from each team, the team selected their own honoree, and when you get a note back from them, and oh my gosh, I wish I could share that with you, that moment when you get a letter from somebody who's been selected, and the absolute outpouring of emotion and the joy that they're being, you know, chosen to represent their family, their heritage, you know, their background, and be part of this initiative. That's the best part of it by a long stretch. But you know what, just telling the stories, it's special. It makes me feel good to do it. And, you know, so yeah, we put a lot of thought into it. We want to grow this. We want that part of what makes the CFL so special to continue to be something that we share with our fans and frankly, maybe people who otherwise haven't been fans of our league might just look in and go, wow, these people are doing some really good things. And then come for the great kind of social aspect of this and stay for the football, because the football is pretty darn exciting.
Speaking of the football, we know things will be happening in the stadium over the next couple of weeks. What can fans expect to see?
Well, you know, I think you're going to see the honorees, attending games. You're going to see on the sidelines, each team has its own unique shirt. You know, the diversity of strength front and the name of the honoree on the back. We're doing some really cool things where, you know, we've got teams that are involved in celebrating new Canadians. Those things are happening. You know, we're supporting what the teams are trying to do in their own communities to the best of our abilities. We've asked some of our biggest supporters who are, you know, constantly telling our story to spread the word that you know, our diversity is strength campaign is back. And so much of what happens from here happens because of the work that all of you do to tell the story and, you know, getting people excited. You're going to laugh, but I often think for me, diversity in some respects has been about the food, right? Because you make a teammate, friend who's a teammate, and he comes from a different background, and before you know it, you're mooching a free meal off his mom, and now you're trying food that you'd never tried before, and when you're an offensive lineman, that's a pretty cool thing. Well, it's a very cool thing, in fact. All of those things are part of this campaign and more, and we're just going to keep working at it.
Oh, side note here, what is the best food you has snuck at a teammate's house?
Oh, my gosh. Well, okay, there's so many stories to tell, and I was famous for my mooching ability because they always have to look a little pitiful, you know, and look as though you haven't eaten for a month. But my dear friend, Kari Ilarenko, who's Finnish, and Kari's mom had a dish called pula, which is like a bread. It's so good it makes you cry. And I was fortunate enough to be welcomed into the Ilarenko home on more than one occasion and was treated to Mrs. Ilarenko's cooking. That stands out in my mind as just one. But you know what, then you think of like Tom Spalatini, my teammate in Calgary, and you know, Tom's family, and now, you know, Tom and Mike Palumbo and Tony Spalatini's Palumbo's in Calgary, my friend Dan Ferroni, who's a chef, and you know, football Hall of Famer, and going to Dan's for dinner. The food is so good. Again, it'll make you cry. So again, lots of eating, lots of crying. That's the big theme.
So this year we're celebrating members of each team, and in Saskatchewan it's Neil Hughes. What was the one thing you learned about all these trailblazers during this campaign that you're going to take with you?
Yeah, in some ways, I think it is that they all had to overcome something. You know, there was something about their personal journey that made it tougher for them. You know, that their path wasn't as, you know, somebody had to do some work before them, but they had to carry a lot of water up the hill. And that in what makes them special is that they did that work. They performed incredibly well, but they were overcoming obstacles while doing it. And you have to admire that, you know, sometimes we're just fortunate. Somebody blazes a trail and we follow in behind. I think for a lot of these people, they were the trailblazers. They were the ones that set a path for others to follow in. And I, you know, every time I'm with them or I hear their stories, it makes me proud that, you know, through my association with the league, I get in some part to be part of their lives, and that makes it special.
Now, we're kind of in a time where the CFL is a very welcoming league, that they highlight that quite a bit. Was that the case when you were a player as well, or did you ever experience any kind of problems in that regard, you know, in a diversity regard?
Yeah, again, great question. You know, I think for the most part, one of the things I love about athletes and love about the players in the league is players are pretty simple people. Their questions about your entrance into their domain really boils down to, can you help us win? You know, like you have to be in a locker room to know that, but, you know, it's not always perfect. And yes, you know, sometimes locker rooms can be challenging places, but I think that the nice thing about players in general is that they welcome newcomers. They want those newcomers to help them succeed, and that creates an environment for, you know, people to flourish in. It's always, you have to remind yourself that, you know, no story is perfect. You know, occasionally we stumble, occasionally there is a problem, but generally speaking, you get welcomed into those locker rooms, you get welcomed into the community by the fans, and it's just an honor to be, you know, to be part of that world when, you know, for me, that's how I felt during my 9-year career, and I certainly feel that way now.
What exactly does diversity as strength mean to you?
Yeah, well, it means that it's really about inclusiveness. You know, I think about the game of football, and I'm not sure there's a sport anywhere in the world that is as inclusive. And think of it this way. So every team has got players of staggeringly different proportions. You've got the small person who's super fast. You've got the giant person who's maybe like me, not so fast. You've got strong people, tall people, short people, wide people, thin people, and they all can be stars on a football team. I think the game itself is designed to be inclusive. I think it's a game that society needs. I think kids need it. I just think it's a reminder that we can do a lot together, and that's the other part of diversity that I think is misunderstood, perhaps. It's not diversity without a purpose. It's actually diversity with a purpose, that coming together and that feeling that we have something we can do together. It's not just Canada being bigger, but it's Canada being bigger and better. It's the CFL not just, you know, having new people in it, but new people are going to contribute to their team's success. So I think it's that inclusion with purpose that I find so compelling and what makes this initiative so fundamentally important.
Now, Mr. Commissioner, one more for you here, kind of stepping away from the diversity of strength. We've had a lot of people ask us, what happened with Johnny Football on the weekend in their game? Manziel got hit pretty hard going for a touchdown and looked like he was out on the ground and was able to stay in the game. What exactly happened there?
Well, I can tell you that I've had now a full briefing. We did reach out to Montreal through our general counsel. We did a review. We are absolutely confident and satisfied that was not a concussion situation. It was actually a neck strain. The player, in this case, Johnny, got hit hard. This is so important to us that, because there was a question about the circumstances, we asked our general counsel to do a review and make sure that all the protocols had been followed and that there were no shortcuts taken. And I can say with satisfaction tonight that we feel good about how their doctors handled that situation. They were careful, they were cautious, and in the end, I think they followed all the protocols. But you know, the one thing, just by the fact that you're asking the question, it reminds me we just have to continue to work at this. There is no day that we can afford to rest on the issue of keeping our players safe.
Well, Mr. Commissioner, that's everything we have for you this time here on the Piffles Podcast. Thank you so much for your time.
Guys, always a pleasure, and thanks very much. Have a great evening, and a big hello to all of your fans and supporters.
Commissioner Randy Ambrosi here on the Piffles Podcast. So this weekend at Sunday's game against Calgary, we're going to see not only the Plaza of Honor induction of Jim Hopson and John Terry, but we're also going to see Neil Hughes there as well for the Diversity of Strength campaign. And that's going to be something pretty cool because I really love that the league is doing this initiative and it really is trying to include everyone and not just the players themselves, but this also reaches to the front office of the league as well. When I became a fan of this league, it was an old boys club. And for the longest time, it always was. You look at who's running the league now, and yeah, you can put Randy Ambrosi at the top there as commissioner, but really the person that runs the league is Christina Litz. She is phenomenal, and the staff that they have in place at the CFL, amazing, amazing people. Brody Lawson, Claire Hutchinson, Christina, there are just absolutely amazing people in the CFL, and it's not just that old boys club anymore. And you see the league growing as it has the last 5, 6, 7 years, and it's a great thing.
I love the CFL. They're one of the few professional leagues that has been progressive, I guess, for lack of a better term. And the fact that they are willing to go out there and go, hey, we are proud of who we are and we are. Remember the This Is Our League things? And that happened long before Ambrosi came in. It was the, like, we are a league of Kwongs. We're a league of Conikers and Jacksons and
Haji Rizulis.
Exactly. And I got goosebumps thinking of that commercial. I have that video saved on my laptop. I watch it all the time. I love that video. Because it made me proud to be a fan of this league. And that was years ago. And they always have embraced that, yes, we're a little bit different. Yes, we got the Rouge. Yes, we got three downs. But we also have all these great people have come up here. Like Warren Moon got his never would have been a quarterback in the NFL if he didn't come up here. And that's a great thing. Like, this league is special.
I really love that the league basically takes the best part of Canada and includes it in, you know, in my opinion, the best sport there is in the Canadian Football League. It takes that diversity, that big group of Canadians that we all are. You know, we're not different colors, we're not different races, we are Canadian. And that's what the CFL tries to, you know, highlight, is that we're all football players. And I just love what they're doing and just trying to, you know, highlight the kind of the differences and the trailblazers that have come up through the league.
Yeah, it should be a great thing that we see over the next couple of weeks in the stadiums around the CFL. And like I said, this week we'll be seeing stuff at Mosaic Stadium there with Neil Hughes. I'm sure there'll be some sort of video or something anyway. But there'll be stuff partying in the park beforehand. I'm sure he'll be, you know, walking around and everything too. So make sure you're out there. It'll be a great thing to celebrate.
I really hate the fact that I'm on a family vacation this week and I have to miss this game because I love me some Neil Hughes.
Same.
I looked over there. I was like, Amy, you love you some Neil Hughes too, right?
Maybe for different reasons.
Should we bring back a former segment?
Yeah.
One more time?
I've had a crush on him since I was in high school.
Well, you went to high school with him, so.
My introduction to Neil Hughes wasn't a high school crush. It was when he played for the Rams. And
it was a university crush.
No, just a hell of a player. And when he signed on with the Riders, it was a perfect fit. And great community guy. Great player, and he deserves every accolade he gets.
And there's only a handful of people that can say that they are a two-time Grey Cup champion with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, and he is one of them.
Yep.
So that'll be great to see him this upcoming weekend. Now, keeping things rolling here, time now for this week's Cypress Hills Destination Area Piffles Player Profile. I really want to know. Now, he's shown some flashes this season and will get more of an opportunity to make a name for himself with the departure of Daron Carter. This week, we're going to get to know a little bit more about Riders receiver Shaq Evans.
Now, Shaq, you were around in the NFL for a couple of years. What did you learn down south that you can bring up here to Saskatchewan?
Just to be, you know, what's it called? Resilient, you know, like, because, you know, it's a lot of things out of your control in the game of football, whether you're down south or up here. So all you can do every day is come out and work, get better, and let the chips fall where they make. So that's what I learned.
Now, what was your first impression of the CFL and Saskatchewan itself when you got here as a kid growing up in California?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly didn't know where or what Saskatchewan was, you know, before they called me and offered me a contract. So, you know, but just being in different countries, a great experience, you know, just learning how people do things just a little differently, you know, say words differently, spell them differently. Like, you spell favorite with a U. These guys spell like a center with a R-E. It's like, it's real cool, man, just to see, you know, a different place. So my first impression was definitely, it's just different, but it's definitely a fun place to be.
Now, on the field, we've seen some flashes of what you can bring, big playability. But in your own words, what do you bring the Riders?
Yeah, I think I just bring, you know, just the playmaking ability. A guy that's going to go out there every day and give it his all, you know, whether it's blocking, getting my teammates open, or making a play for myself. You know, I'm just a guy that's going to go out there and compete every single play, practice or game.
Biggest attribute you have?
Biggest attribute I have is just my competitiveness. You know, once, like, I'm an even kill guy off the field, you know, ask everybody, they know me, I'm quiet, don't say much, but once I get on the field, you know, I'm real competitive, love having fun, you know, and I just love the competition of football.
Now, off the field, are you the same type of person that you were when you were a kid growing up?
Oh, yeah, I'm no different. Anybody that knows me since I was little, or even from just middle school or high school on, just knows I'm the same person. I've never changed. Since even when I got drafted, nothing changed. I'm the same guy. Like, no, I'm the same Shaq since day one.
Where do you draw your inspiration from?
Inspiration I draw from my mother, you know, because she had me at a young age. She had me at around 16, and she made a lot of sacrifices for me, you know, to be able to be here to this day. So definitely all my inspiration comes from my mother and the things that she did for me with her sacrifices and things like that.
Needless to say, you're very close with her then?
Yeah, definitely. I didn't have my dad in my life for a lot of my life, so my mom was the one that was always there, so definitely close with her.
Now, if you could sit down with one person, dead or alive, who would it be, and what would you ask them?
If I could sit down with one person, dead or alive, I'd sit down with Randy Moss and just ask him, what's in you? Like, what is it that God gave you that he didn't give everybody else? Because you got something that that nobody else has, hand, speed, quick and I definitely would love to talk to Randy Moss just to pick his brain and just to see what his mindset was.
So he goes up when he jumps over a guy, grabs the ball, he gets mossed, right?
Yeah.
When you do that to a guy, you yell out, you got shacked? You should. Trademark that. Get that on a shirt. Trademark it.
Hey, Alex, that's a great idea. I might use that.
Now you just finished the bye week. What kept you busy?
Just hanging out with friends, you know, back at home. You know, I love being home, California, being with family and things like that. So that's what just kept me busy, you know, just being around them and, just chilling, really. You know, just get away from football for a little bit. You know, not completely away. Obviously, I was still working out and things like that. But just try to get away from, like, the game, not watching it, just spending time with family, you know, for at least the first, because we've been gone for, like, 8 days. So at least the first 3-4 days was just all about, you know, just chilling and family and things like that.
Okay, if you can get a time machine, you can go one place. Are you going back in time or are you going into the future?
If I'm going back to the 90s, you know, I wish I grew up in the 90s. You know, I love the 90s music. So if I had a time machine, I would definitely grow up in the 90s. Not like, I was only like, you know, in my younger years, like 8, 7, 6, like that. But I wish I was like 15, 16, 17 in the 90s.
To get to go see some of the shows.
Yeah.
All right, now kind of a lightning round here. What's your favorite cereal?
Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Yes, right there, by the way. Favorite cheat meal?
Wings.
Rom-com or sci-fi?
Sci-fi.
Guilty pleasure?
I don't know. Guilty pleasure is my Oreos, man. I can't stop eating Oreos. But anything from the 90s R&B, I don't know, anything.
And finally, dogs or cats?
Dogs. Hate cats.
Yeah, right answer. Shaq, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
There was Shaq Evans here on the Cypress Hills Destination Area Pivots Player Profile. Let's get a profile of somebody else now. Time to talk to this week's fan contest winner. This week, our winner is Zaid O'Shaughnessy of Regina, Saskatchewan. And we have Zaid on the line right now. Zaid, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Well, great. Thank you for asking. Appreciate that. Now, very first question for you. You're a big Rider fan, correct?
Yeah.
How did you become a Rider fan?
Well, one day I just went down in my dad's basement. He had a Rider game on, and I just couldn't stop watching. I was born a Rider fan.
What's your first memory that you have of the Rough Riders?
I went to a game in 2014 against the BC Lions. That was my first ever Rider game. And I loved it.
What do you remember for that game? What made it so memorable for you?
It was in the old Mosaic.
What's your favorite part of going to a Rider game?
The energy that you get from when the Riders are scoring a touchdown.
Who's your favorite player?
Willie Jefferson.
How come?
Last year when I was playing tackle football, he came to my practice.
Do you play football? What's your number? You got a lucky number?
25.
Do you have a Rider jersey in your possession?
Yeah.
Who's on the back of it?
Jerome Messam.
Now, who would you say is the best player on the Riders right now?
I don't really know. Guess Brandon Bridge, maybe. Marcus Sigpen.
Those are some good players. The last question we have for you, and this is the most important one. So you're a big Rider fan. If you hear the words Rider pride, what does that mean to you?
Everything, I guess.
Would you say that being a Rider fan is more than just being a fan of the team, but there's more to it than that?
Yeah, like, you gotta support your team through everything. Even if we lose a Grey Cup, you can't just join another team. You gotta support your team.
Awesome. Well, Zaid, thank you for telling us a little bit about you being a Rider fan here.
Thanks.
And don't forget, you can enter into the Piffles Podcast fan contest at piffles podcast.com for your chance to share your Rider pride with the world. And don't forget, Why Not is back this week on riderfans.com. Going to talk or answer some questions about the upcoming game. Do you think Cameron Marshall will score a touchdown? Will they score a touchdown? All that stuff on riderfans.com. Gain some points by getting questions right. And at the end of the year, they tally up all the points and you get a prize. So make sure you go to riderfans.com for that. Instead of would you rather, and we usually have that at the end of the show, we're going to shake things up a little bit. And it's not a would you rather question, but it's something else. Amy, why don't you take it away?
All right. Here's the question today, boys. Still a two-parter, but different. Hypothetically speaking, you're on death row. What is your crime? What have you been charged for? And what is your last meal?
So here's the thing. If you're on death row, you probably killed somebody, right? Or multiple people. So that's probably the crime, I guess.
Murder?
Gotta be. Last meal, I feel it'd be cop-out to say, like, steak and potatoes. Just a real nice, juicy, perfect steak and just sit there and enjoy one last meal. But, like, wouldn't you want to gorge on something, too? Like, screw it. I'm going to die right away anyway.
Give me 3 bags of chips, 17 chocolate bars, 4 Slurpees, and 4 buckets of ice cream.
And Orlon. The meal's so decadent you have to eat it with a veil over your face to hide your face from God.
Right? What would you do?
Got
what
it.
What would be a decadent meal that you would have to put a veil over your face?
Look up Orlon.
Oh, okay. I will.
Got it. Greek food. A big platter of Greek food.
Oh, good for you.
honestly, for those that don't know, Greg doesn't like
I
Greek
like
food,
some
and we
Greek food.
We had very intense argument at CFL week over this.
It was a gentleman's disagreement.
It was fantastic, is what it was.
That made him scared of cabbie.
And we almost came to fists.
But okay, me, cliche steak, medium. Double stuffed baked potato, lobster tail, cherry cheesecake, and a fine craft beer.
You've thought about this. Is there something you haven't told us?
Oh, believe me.
You planning your last meal anytime soon?
Someday. No, I'm kidding. But no, that's where I'd go.
For me, it's I can tell you right off that it took me no time at all. Give me a gigantic plate, like the biggest plate you could find, of fettuccine Alfredo, but it has to be from Luigi's.
That's a good fettuccine Alfredo.
No matter where I go, I compare it to that, it never wins. Fettuccine Alfredo from Luigi's, I would literally kill somebody to have an unending supply of that.
So that's probably
what happens, right?
What would you have?
Oh, God.
She already said 4 Slurpees and
right?
chocolate bars.
And- Maybe. I don't know if there's a meal that, like, I love enough. Maybe, like, 7 pizzas from Giuliana.
Oh, I'd have Amy's nachos.
I mean, all right. I'll make them for you.
I don't have to, like, get on death row to make that happen, do I?
Yes, it's the only way you're ever going to have them again.
That's rude.
Oh, you done screwed up now.
But agreeable. All right. I guess I know what's coming up next.
I've got a list if you want to borrow it.
This got dark.
That's what Amy's here for.
No wonder you've thought about that so much, Greg.
So, there we go. I guess we're all in agreement why we're on death row, and I like that we all have different meals, so that's good. Amy, thanks for shaking things up this week.
Hey, no problem.
Moving on, let's get to our Tallgrass Apparel, Engaging with the Enemy. This week on the Tallgrass Apparel, Engaging with the Enemy, our enemy is not such an enemy itself anymore, but we'll say it's an old friend. Joining us on the line right now is Calgary Stampeders offensive lineman, the 2016 most outstanding lineman of the CFL, Derek Dennis. Bone Crusher, thanks for your time.
What's going on, man? What's going on?
Hey, just having a little bit of fun after the bye week. Before we go back a bit to your time here and you going back to Calgary, I got to ask, it's the biggest story in the CFL right now. Daron Carter released by Chris Jones and the Riders. Now, last year you played with him. Does a move like this come as a shock to you or your teammates at all?
Maybe to other guys, but to me, no, it's not a shocker. I kind of know how the intricacies of things work and in that building. And to see it happen, probably the timing probably was a little off. Probably caught people unexpectedly. But to say that it wouldn't have happened is... You wouldn't understand unless you were in that building.
Now, pardon me, and feel free to absolutely shut this down, too. I want to pry into that a little bit if I can. Is there anything, not necessarily giving, you know, bad specifics or anything, but is there anything, any kind of light you can shed on that at all?
It's just Jones runs his team a certain way. It's kind of his thing, man. Everybody knows that Jones is he's a very, you know, aggressive coach, and he coaches a certain way, and he wants his team to be a certain way. And regardless of who you are, if you're not fitting his model, then he does what he has to do as the head man in charge.
All right. Now, speaking of that, last year the Riders moved you from tackle to guard on the line. What was that like for you at the time?
It wasn't nothing. I was just doing what I had to do to help the team win. They asked me to play guard because they felt like they didn't have anybody else that was going to be good enough to help the position out. And they knew I was a utility guy. They knew it was a guy from 2016. I had started 3 games at guard when I won the award. So it was kind of teams looked at it as a commodity. I remember even talking to Toronto, and Toronto told me that the fact that I could play more than one position was enticing to them because I could help them out in terms of, you know, injuries and ratio or whatever, so be it. So they just asked me to play guard. I was doing what I thought I was doing what I had to do to help the team win. And at that point, you know, we were on a really good roll around that time.
So you win the Most Outstanding Lineman Award in 2016, come to Saskatchewan. Some would say there was a dip in from the Most Outstanding Lineman, but you're back to your old ways being a dominant left tackle. What was the problem in Saskatchewan last year? Would it be schemes, or what do you think?
As I alluded to before in the past, man, not every football player fits in every football system. You know, you got coaches who can coach up certain guys. You got coaches who have a scheme that fits certain strengths of a player, and it's just kind of how it is. Sass has a very unique offense, and they like to run it a certain way, and McAdoo's very aggressive about making sure he gets what he wants outside of the offense. So, I mean, it's kind of like any other system. You got to find guys that fit what you do, or you got to find if they can't, you got to find somebody who can.
So moving to the day that you were released here from Saskatchewan, what did Chris Jones tell you?
He didn't tell me anything. I didn't speak to him.
How'd you find out?
I actually found out on Instagram. The news was already out there, and everybody was already printing up the graphics and all that stuff. So by the time I found out, it was already news to it was news to me when everybody else had already knew maybe for about an hour or so. But I probably attribute that to it. I was in the middle of training, and normally when I'm training, I train 2-3 hours a day, and I'm normally don't have my phone in me. So I think I did get a call from a 306 number. I didn't know who it was. But I think they did try to give me a call, but I didn't speak to anybody. And by the time the news was out, I had found out like how everybody else did.
So how do you take something like that then?
It's business to me. I didn't take it personal. I don't have any ill will towards anybody. Certain people do business a certain type of way, and that's just how they operate. And that's how I took it. I took it as that's just how they operate, and just move on to the next part of life.
Now, speaking of that, moving on, how easy was it for you to sign back in Calgary as a free agent?
It was very easy. I mean, the biggest known factor was they called me and asked me if I could come back. They wanted me back. They felt like I could be the same player that people had thought of me, aside from my season last season, and they felt like I could get back to that, being in that system, because they knew what type of player I was, and they knew the type of player I am here in their system. So it was more like I told Murray McCormick, I told him the same thing. It was more of looking for a fit where I wanted to go to a place where I felt like the coaches believed in me, the coaches trusted me, and they had faith in me, and they knew the type of player I was and what I was capable of, and wanted to work with me. So that was the biggest part of me looking into being a free agent again the second time around.
Now, you just got off the bye week. What did Bone Crusher do with his free time, and how is little Bone Crusher doing?
Bye week was great. It was nice to go home, see the family. My son is doing awesome, man. He's a monster, man. He's a big kid. He's already 2.5 feet or a little over and 23 pounds, and he's only 10 months. So he's going to be a very big kid. And, you know, I think for the team, you know, it was good. It was nice to catch a little break, you know, being 7-0 and giving your mind and your body a chance to rest and get away from football is always a good thing. And I think we're getting ready for another stretch before we get our next bye week.
We were actually just discussing this before we called you, so we got to get your take on it. Hypothetically okay. speaking, you're on death row. What do you pick for your last meal?
That's interesting. Well, at least for me, because there's a lot of things I like to eat. But I think, to be honest, I really don't know what I would ask for a last meal. I probably would ask for something that I've never eaten before. And probably I shouldn't be eating because I'm allergic to shellfish, but I probably would ask. I figure if I'm going to die anyway, I might as well eat something I never
eat.
Might
as well go for it, right?
Yeah, might as well go for it and see what happens. Maybe it'll take me out before I hit the chair.
I couldn't decide if I picked like my favorite meal or if I just go, pardon the expression, but I just go balls deep and just get like four bags of chips and a bunch of Slurpees and ice cream. Like, I don't know what's better.
I think that's probably the smartest thing, to just indulge.
You know, right?
Go after things that you normally wouldn't eat or you've always wanted to try and never had the chance to. Or indulge in whatever your favorite your favorite vices are, and just taking that.
I could get with that.
Yeah.
So we got to ask you. You're going up against former teammate Charleston Hughes again this weekend. What's the smack talk on the line like between the two of you? Do you guys get going back and forth?
Honestly, last game I didn't even talk to Charleston at all. It was more like I feel like me and Charleston's debate is always like, it's like a big brother, little brother debate. Like, oh, I'm good at this and you can't stop me. And it's like, oh, I'm just as good as you and I can stop you type of thing. So it's like, I know he was smack talking with a bunch of other guys. I didn't even realize Charleston had a mic on the last game. So it's a good thing I probably didn't talk because they probably would have got some really unfiltered messages coming from my side of things.
And who's the big brother and who's the little brother in that situation?
Charleston's for sure the big brother. I mean, he's 36 years old. He's been in this league since 2007, 2008. I'm the young buck. This is my third full season in the CFL, so I'm still a young buck. I'm still learning. I'm still getting the intricacies of everything. And Charleston's, he's the seasoned vet, man. It's not too many things that he hasn't seen in a football game or that he hasn't gone up against, so. He's one of those guys that you always got to bring your A game. Or you always got to bring your A game to play Charleston, man, because he's a bona fide Hall of Famer.
And Derek, one more thing before we let you go. You got an open mic right now. Is there anything you want to say to Rider Nation at all?
I just want to say thank you to Rider Nation. I enjoyed my time there, even though it was brief. I definitely felt the love and I felt the excitement from a lot of people, and I was extremely excited to be a part of it, thinking I would be there for a couple years and be a part of it. And to any of the disgruntled fans who felt like I was overpaid or underperforming last year, I apologize for not giving you your money's worth, man. But I hope you see what I was capable of now.
Derek, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Derek Dennis here on the Tallgrass Apparel, engaging with the enemy. Now, speaking of the Calgary Stampeders, Riders are playing them this weekend, this Sunday. The Plaza of Honor game, Jim Hobson and John Terry being inducted into the Plaza of Honor this weekend. Before we get to our little game preview, just give you guys a minute or two here. Jim Hobson and John Terry going into the Plaza of Honor. Thoughts?
Hobson, well-deserved. I'm not saying Terry's not, but Hobson was definitely a driving force behind the resurgence of the Riders. I remember before he came on board as CEO, there were some dark times, obviously, and that was at the tail end of the Shivers Barrett era, and Riders started winning games and championships. No one ever thought that was going to happen, did they?
And some say that he's the driving force behind us having brand new Mosaic Stadium, that a lot of his contributions led to that. And I think they're absolutely true. Jim Hobson, and we've talked to him in person before, wonderful man, and you will never, ever see him without a big smile on his face. He's just a happy, go-lucky guy, and there's honestly no one really more deserving of Plaza of Honor than him. John Terry, I think, and again, a deserving individual as well, too, I think got overlooked quite a bit because he was on some really bad Rider teams in the 90s and going into the early 2000s.
It kind of amazed me that they found players from that era of the Riders that were good enough to be in the Plaza of Honor.
Just need Lamar McGriggs in there now.
But yeah, Terry, if you look, if you, like you said, overlooked, but if you look at his stats, he was a beast on that line. And they didn't play the same without him in the lineup. So definitely well-deserved.
The few games that they actually won in those years that he played were with him in the lineup.
Yeah.
So John Terry also deserving, and we'll see him this Sunday at the Plaza of Honor induction game. Now, the game itself, Riders against Stamps, Stamps 7-0, both teams coming off the bye, the Riders 3-4. I don't like using must win in early in the season or generally at all, because every game you must win. Like, that's the whole point of the game is to win. But the Riders need to win this game. Otherwise, they just fall further back, and if BC wins their next game and the Riders play in BC next week, and if they can't beat them, then we're looking at three games back of a playoff spot, and that is not okay going into Labor Day. What is the one thing the Riders must do to beat the Calgary Stampeders? And don't say score more points.
Damn it.
Not score less?
The defense needs to
show up.
Thanks
for coming prepared, guys.
The defense needs to show up. That's been our key to victory all season long. We know our offense is not going to put up 40 points. You know, maybe they will. That'd be great. But you cannot expect that offense to put up numbers. We're going to need a showing like we had last game. We were in that game against Calgary 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago now, I guess, right through to the bitter end. Take away that god-awful first quarter. Yeah, there's the key. Show up for the first quarter.
Don't spot the best team in the league 24 points
that would help.
Start the game.
Well, I believe I quoted Lancaster last time we talked about this. But the defense is going to show up. I'm not worried about the defense not showing up. It's we need to figure out how to score points. And at this point, I don't care if it's field goal, rouges, safeties, whatever. We need to get points on the board. And I just don't know where they're going to come from.
Probably Brett Lauther's leg.
Probably. But no, Duran's going to hurt. So somebody on the offense is going to have to strap that team on their back and lead them. And that's going to come on Kolaros' arm.
It's got to be Zach Kolaros. He has to be good. Now, he didn't play the last game against them, but he needs to be the 2015 version of Zach Kolaros. We have good receivers, even without Duron Carter. We do have very talented receivers. We got to get them the ball and let them make plays. It comes down to that. The offense needs to
continue
drives. Yeah, and they need to score points. And I know I've said it pretty much all season long. They got to score 7, not 3.
And it would be great if they would capitalize on, or not capitalize, but actually convert on second or third and one at a better than a 25% clip. That's probably going to be a big key to winning.
Third and one, I can tell you exactly where they're going.
The gun?
Well, no, that was a surprise to me because they actually got a touchdown off that
backwards.
In Edmonton. Yeah, pretty much. No, they're going to go right off in the A-gap every single time. And Alex Singleton is no idiot. He's going to jump there every single time.
I'm pretty sure he did jump there every single time when they were here last time.
Yeah, and that's, we saw two fumbles on short yardage plays. So don't turn the ball over. I can make a laundry list now that I think about it. What does the team need to do to win? But they need to, the offense needs to be good. They don't have to be great, but they need to be good.
Who's going to be our leading receiver this week?
Ed Gainey.
Seriously, who do you think is going to be our leading receiver?
Well, they're going to take
catches,
away...
Catches, not yards.
They're going to take away Roosevelt. In catches?
Yeah.
Cameron Marshall.
Yeah. Running back, Trey Mason. It'll be a running back.
Yards, or Jordan Williams-Lambert.
Caleb Hawley.
It is episode 88.
And also, he's coming off being benched. So, I mean...
If that doesn't light fire under his butt, nothing will.
Right? And he had a lot of drops in the last couple of games. And he's going to add that extra stick-em on. Like, I mean, he's going to have... I think he'll have to have a good game.
All I see is little giants with a guy stuck with his hand stuck to his chest.
That's such a good movie. I haven't seen that in years.
I don't know what I'm doing when I get home.
And we should have a watch party of that instead of going to watch a football game or something.
Piffle's movie night.
Should we touch on that? Because that's next week.
Yeah. Well, why don't we talk about that right now?
So next week, Piffle's podcast is going to be hitting up Mr. Mike's in Grasslands, which... During the Piffles Bowl discussion, we didn't throw them a thank you. I want to give them a huge thank you for giving us a great venue and supplying all of our participants with gift cards and great service. So thanks, Mr. Mikes. But we're going to throw a little watch party. We want to get together with you guys, sit down, watch. Football is more fun to watch in a group. There's just no arguing that. So 8 p.m., I believe it is. 8 p.m., Mr. Mikes in Grasslands. Come on out, watch some football. If you want to come out, just let us know. Send us a message on Twitter, Facebook. Reach out to one of us just so we know how many to expect. And come watch some football.
So that's next Saturday, August 25th. The Riders are in BC, 8 p.m. We'll all be there. We'll have a great time. And hopefully watch the Riders get back into playoff contention.
They'll be fighting for second by then. We're going 2-0 in the next two. Book it.
Oh, God. Steve's a mush. We're screwed.
Right? Uh-oh.
All right. One more thing before we take off here this week. Our Week 10 CFL picks. And we'll get right down to it. Ottawa at Winnipeg.
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 Same.
Winnipeg. BC at Toronto. BC.
Toronto.
Toronto.
BC. Montreal at Edmonton.
Edmonton?
Montreal.
You said that.
Is that real?
Remember how you did that last week and you're like, oh, wait, no, screw that. And
yeah, no, this time I'm sticking with it. I think post-concussion Johnny Football comes out and goes off.
Imagine Jason Moss losing to Johnny Manziel.
Oh, my God, please.
There will not be a water cooler safe enough in the city. Edmonton.
Edmonton. And finally, Calgary and the Riders.
Calgary.
Saskatchewan.
I can't say it. Not Saskatchewan.
I said it last time these guys played, and if it wasn't for that disaster first quarter, they should have won. That will not happen again this week. The Riders will win this game.
I hope I'm wrong.
I hope you're wrong too, Greg.
I also hope you're wrong.
Just like Greek food. You're wrong.
I am not.
Anyway, that's going to do it for us here on the Piffles Podcast. Thank you so much for taking time and listening to us. Give us a follow on Twitter at PifflesPod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
You can find me at Safamod.
Follow me at Greg on Sports.
And I am at Real Amy D.
Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. We're also on Instagram. Just search at PifflesPod. And check out the website, PifflesPodcast.com. While you're there, don't forget to enter in the Piffles Podcast fan contest. And you can be a weekly winner just like Zaid O'Shaughnessy of Regina. Piffles Podcast is brought to you by our great friends at Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive in Regina. And a special thanks as well to Kathy Festian of Royal LePage Regina Realty, Tallgrass Apparel, and Cypress Hills Destination Area for their support to make this show possible. As we say goodbye, we're going to leave you with one more of our featured artists of 2018. This is Beauty Killed the Beast and their song, Hometown. Turn it around, knock the bricks to the dirt, pull the roots from the ground.